Doom do 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 doom do do. Doom do 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 doom do do.
Hi, plant people. Welcome to episode 002 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
I started Bloom and Grow Radio because I really wanted to empower people to be confident in their ability to take care of their plants, and I couldn't think of a better first guest for Bloom and Grow Radio than Chris Satch. He's the plant scientist and head of education at The Sale, which is an amazing plant shop in Chinatown, but they ship gorgeous potted plants nationwide and have an amazing Instagram. Check them out. Chris's knowledge for plants is just unparalleled. He has a master's in plant science, and his enthusiasm and passion for helping people love their plant collections is amazing, and I'm so excited to share the conversation we had. So I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. All right, I'm here with Chris Satch from The Sill, and you are the plant scientist, and what is your official title at The Sill? You wear so many hats for them.
A lot of hats. I'm the plant scientist, head of education, lots of things for The Sill. I also do a little bit of their website for them as well, so a lot of hats.
Right, because you have a dual degree, right, in computer science and plants?
Yes. My undergrad, I have two degrees. I have a bachelor's in computer science, bachelor's in biology, but then I went on to Rutgers to get my master's in plant science.
Wow, that's amazing. And for those listening in, Chris and I are actually sitting at The Sill storefront in Chinatown, surrounded by, I would say, how many hundreds of plants are we surrounded by right
There's
now?
There's a lot of plants.
It's the most magical urban jungle that we could be sitting in for this interview, so it's quite special. Lots of ferns, too.
Oh, I love the ferns. They're one of my favorites.
So talk to me a little bit about your personal collection before we go into The Sill. I know you're a big orchid guy. How many plants do you have? When did you start growing your collection? What was your first plant? That kind of stuff.
So it's kind of funny because, like, the focus of my collection, my personal collection, has changed over time. So my very first plant, or very first long-term plant, was a plant given to me by my grandmother. It was an aloe vera. And she used to have, you know, some skin problems, so she would, like, have all these aloes all over the place hanging around, and she would just, like, rip them off every now and then and use them. And then she gave me one, and I've had it since I was like 5 or 6 years old, so I've had it for many, many, many years, and it's just been like always a part of my collection. But over time, it's actually shifted to, like, I've always liked plants that are like really cool and useful, so like I've always had like a lemon tree or like a bay rum plant as a part of my collection. I've had other like sort of like semi-medicinal plants as well. I grow vegetables outside, herbs and spices, things like that. But now, recently, it's taken a turn for orchids. And so
you're like the orchid specialist.
You could call me that. My friend actually, in my last year of grad school, my friend Rodrigo, he actually got me into orchids. Because originally I thought that like all orchids were like the Phalaenopsis type that you see in stores everywhere. I was like, this is kind of boring, it doesn't have any fragrance, because for me it's got to be like useful in some way. So I'm like, oh, does the flower have a scent? And I was like, no, these don't smell at all. So I'm like, ah, this is no good. But then he showed me the diversity of all these other orchids, and I was like, wow, some of these are really fragrant, and some of them are used in, actually a lot of orchid fragrances are used in perfumes, like in Chanel perfumes, Gucci perfumes, you name it, there's probably an orchid in there. And then I started collecting them, because then, you know, if it wasn't the blooms, it was the fragrance. And then there's just all these different kinds of different shapes and sizes, and some of them are really cool, and a lot of them are actually pretty easy to grow.
How many orchids do you have?
Oh, God. I have something like 40 orchids now.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's a collection.
On top of probably all the other plants that you have.
Yeah, I have like maybe 20 or 30 other plants. So I have like maybe 70 plants-ish hanging around the apartment.
Wow.
I love my tropical plants, though. My tropical plants are really nice. They're not fussy. They hang around. They do their thing. So they're really great. And part of the reason what attracted me to The Sill.
What would your favorite plant besides your orchids be?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
It could be like your flavor of the month. It doesn't have to be your all-time. You can do two if you want.
My recent flavor of the month has been my my ginger plant, like my variegated ginger.
Oh.
So I got that one. I found it, and it's just been like an amazing plant. It's like super cool looking, and if you rip the leaves a little bit, it smells like ginger, so I love
it. I've never even heard of that plant. Cool. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then probably your grandma's aloe vera.
Yes, absolutely. That one's always top five.
I love that. I feel like everybody has a plant story that has to deal with their mom teaching them to do something, or my grandparents were farmers, or something like that. There's something in plants that feels very, what's the word I'm looking for? They're like heirlooms, kind of, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Even if it's just stories of your mom's garden or your grandma's garden, there's something very personal about that.
Oh, absolutely. And I think for a lot of people, it's the same with me. It's like it's a connection back to the earth. It's a connection back to your parents or your grandparents. Because it wasn't too long ago that we were a more agriculturally focused society. Mm-hmm. And then that changed over time. And, you know, I think that with the resurgence of houseplants, it's sort of a yearning to go back to that, or to feel that kind of that sense of hominess and
totally
a connection
to nature to when nature. You're surrounded by trucks and
yeah.
city people and all your iPhones. Oh my God, 100%. So how do you get from plant science and computer science at Rutgers to the SIL? What has your journey professionally been?
I've done a lot of research at Rutgers, and then I decided to leave with my master's degree, and I was applying for jobs. I wanted to connect plants with people in the city, mm-hmm. because I'm originally not from the city. I'm originally from a little small backwater town in northwestern New Jersey. And out there, you know, a lot of people are very, you know, they have their gardens, they have their lawns.
Right. And they're like huge backyards. And
huge backyards, big vegetable gardens. And everyone kind of like has a sense, like everyone just kind of knows plants out there because, you know, they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. But then you come to the city and there's like all these people and they're interested in plants and they want that connection, but there's like no real resource or place to go to sustain that or to cultivate that.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to look for plant companies in the city that kind of did that and had an educational outreach, because I'm really big on the education. I really want people to know about plants are easy, plants are awesome, they clean the air. There's no real downside to having a plant. It's not like other things where like, oh, this is like taking too much of my time, or, you know, this isn't good for me, or there's no downside to plants at all. So,
and I think maybe the only downside there might be is if you feel like you can't take care of them, but it's all about outreach and learning and coming and taking a plant 101 class at the SIL or something like that, you know, because you can also turn that into a positive, being like, I used to kill plants, but now I don't. And this is so cool and empowering.
Yeah. And not only that, it's like, you know, you find the plants that you like and you find plants that are good for you. And it's a rewarding experience. It doesn't take too much of your time, or it can take as much time as you want it to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, these plants, they could, you know, in theory live forever. So you can hand them down to your children or your grandchildren. And once they're big enough, once they've lived a lifetime with you, they become these grand stately pieces that you can talk for hours and hours about. You know, you have a giant tree in your living room, someone's mm-hmm. going to say something about your giant tree.
Totally.
And they'll start talking to you about it, and it's just you know, really awesome.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. So talk to us about the SIL and the SIL's mission and this beautiful little storefront that powers deliveries nationwide for houseplants.
The SIL's motto is plants make people happy.
Hashtag plants make people happy.
Exactly.
Love it.
And we believe that, you know, science is cool, plants are fun, plants are neat, and that plant ownership should be a positive experience, that there's no such thing as a black thumb or a green thumb. It's just, you know, horticulture is just as much of an art as it is a science. It's about experience. So like, people are like, oh, Chris, you're so good with plants. I've killed many plants. Mm-hmm. I've killed a lot of plants in my time. But each time it's a learning experience. And each time it's about figuring out what went wrong and what you can do better the next time.
Totally.
So it's a little bit of a trade. It's a little bit of a science. It's like one of the perfect hobbies, I think, because you can go hardcore into the knowledge base if you want to do that, or you could go hardcore into the hands-on doing base, or you could go hardcore into everything in between. Mm-hmm. So I think it's like the perfect hobby for everyone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the educational seminars you do at the SIL are so fun. I was lucky enough to come to one last week. There's wine. There's plant you could ever want laid out on the table. You give the most comprehensive, informational, you know, basics, plant 101. And then you get to go home with the plant.
Yes.
Which is the coolest part. And the SIL, there'll be pictures on the blog associated with this episode of the beautiful plants that the SIL sells. But the planters you guys also have, they're just like curated and beautiful and just a step above like whatever bodega succulent you're going to buy or a whole food succulent you're going to buy.
Absolutely. We screen all of our plants for the highest quality, and there is a noticeable difference. And people come in all the time. They say, you know I can get this at my bodega, but I came here because the plant quality is so much better because we vet our plants. And also our ceramics are really nice. We actually source them locally from a mom and pop ceramic shop in New Jersey.
Oh, really? So, I didn't know that.
Yeah. They're local, so you're supporting local if you buy the ceramics. We have them online too. A lot of our business is actually done online and in the store. So we sort of branched off into everything. Our online store sells plants nationwide, pots nationwide, and coming soon, accessories nationwide.
Oh, really?
Plant accessories, yeah. We're working on developing, or I'm working on developing different like tools you'll need for your plant care so that we can become a one-stop shop.
That's awesome.
So that's in the works. So we're coming soon. You're going to have fertilizers and pest control, things like that, natural for indoors, because there's a lot of pest control things out there and there's a lot of fertilizers out there, but we want to make it simple and we want to make it one stop, because a lot of them, if you go to the lawn and garden center, there's like these huge bags and you don't need a huge bag, you just need a little bit. So
totally, I did that at Home Depot last week. I came home with these like huge bags of things, and then I was like, I have a tiny one bedroom apartment in Long Island City, I have no place to put any of this. Oh, I'm so excited about that. That's awesome. All right, so let's move into Plants 101 with Chris and your top five list of best beginner house plants for people. If someone is nervous that they kill everything and they don't know what to do, what are your best plant picks for the ultimate novice? Okay. And I know you have a very particular opinion about this, so I'm very excited to hear it.
I have a little bit of a prelude to it as well.
Yes, please, give me the prelude.
So, like, selecting a plant for your space is dependent upon you, dependent on your space, and dependent on the plant. So you have to know yourself. If you're a busy bee and if you're going everywhere all the time or you're traveling a lot, you're going to want a plant that needs a little less attention. Or if you're more doting, then you would want a plant that needs more attention.
Right.
Also knowing your space. If you live in a basement or if all your windows face like other buildings and it's not very bright, that's something to take into consideration. And on the flip side, if your apartment is very bright and you have a lot of light coming in, that's also something to take into account, as well as the plant itself. So yeah, you may like a certain plant, but that plant may not be the right choice for your kind of environment or your kind of schedule.
Yeah.
So for selecting a plant, if you're really busy and you get a lot of light, then succulents and cacti are for you. Because to make a plant the happiest, you have to recreate its natural environment. So for cacti and succulents, they're arid region dwellers, they're desert dwellers. So you want to create a desert as best as you can. So that's mostly dry, mostly sunny. They have to have some amount of sun. You can't keep cacti or succulents in a dark corner. And for low light options, that you're, if you're a busy bee, maybe a snake plant or a ZZ plant that only needs to be watered once every couple of weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, that should be fine for you. And it also should be noted that the most important thing about plants is that sunlight is food for plants. So you can't keep a plant in a dark room or in too dark of a corner.
Right.
They do need to be exposed to some amount of indirect light or sunlight or something like that, so that they do make their food and they can survive. Because, you know, it may look nice to put your fiddle leaf fig in a dark corner, but that's a full sun plant. That's going to drop all of its leaves if it's in a dark corner.
Right. And I think there is a, when I was getting started, we don't have a window in our bathroom, and I was like, there's got to be some plant that I could put in my windowless bathroom, and you were like, no, there's no plants. Sorry to break it to you, Maria.
But you can do all sorts of other cool things in
right
there.
No, it's totally fine. But
but if you're more doting, or if you're like more hands-on, or if you've been guilty of overwatering because you're on top of your plant all the time, there are plants that like to be watered a lot. So there are your ferns are a great pick. Air plants are a great pick. Air plants are great. You spritz them once a day, every day, or once every other day, or once every couple of days, depending on your humidity.
Mm-hmm.
They're perfect for bathrooms with windows, so are ferns right. as well, kitchens, bathrooms. But if the rest of your apartment isn't too dry, they're great for that as well. They love being misted and they love being watered. It's very hard to overwater a fern. I mean, the only way you could really overwater a fern is if you leave the soil like sopping wet and soggy. They don't really like that. They have true roots, and those roots do need to breathe at some point.
Right.
But they're okay with a lot of moisture because, again, they've evolved in places where there's a lot of humidity, by ponds, lakes, streams, waterfalls, at the bottom of the forest floor. So they're okay with getting dappled sunlight. Mm. And lower light conditions, as are many of the tropical plants that we have. So, aglaonemas, calatheas, I love the calatheas. They're the prayer plants.
Yeah, they're the prettiest.
They're super nice. They have all these different patterns on them, and they actually move their leaves in a circadian rhythm, a day-night cycle. Mm-hmm. So, at night, they straighten up their leaves, and during the daytime, they flatten their leaves. So, they're super cool. I think they're just awesome plants mm-hmm. to have. So, definitely selecting plants. So, cacti or succulents.
So for low maintenance, is there a cacti or succulent you particularly like specifically, or it's really just they're all pretty much the same?
They're all relatively the same in care. So you can group plants in like classes of care. So like cacti and succulents, bright light, not that much water.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while you want to give them a soak, like a quick soak for like a day, and then take them out and let them dry out as fast as possible
because okay.
they are subject to root rot. So you do want them to dry out.
But they're a good, like, windowsill plant.
Absolutely. Right in the windowsill, you know, even if your window doesn't get that much sunlight, straighten the windowsill.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing to be mindful of are radiators or air conditioning units. You want to keep them away from that. And that's true for any plant. Just be mindful of your radiators and your air conditioning units.
Right.
Plants don't like to sit in front of them or on top of them. I've actually lost many plants to a radiator that just kicked on. Because
yeah.
I thought I could, you know, move them in time, but then that one cold snap hit and I wasn't paying attention to the weather, and well, I lost a lot of plants that way, we'll put it like that. But yeah, no, it's about knowing your surroundings, and there's many ways to circumvent a radiator or an air conditioning unit. You can get clever with macrame, you can build shelves, you can find another window if you have it, but if you don't have another window, what I've done, and my coworkers make fun of me for this, but I'm friends with my local wine store.
Mm-hmm.
And you know they throw out like wooden wine boxes? They just throw them
yeah.
out. They're free. You can mm-hmm. ask for them. And so you can get these wooden wine boxes and they're really cool. They have like all these cool stamps
mm-hmm.
on them, like pirate ships and stuff. And what I do is I bust out the bottom of the box. You have like a nice wooden frame that you can see through. And you can stack the wooden frames on top of one another and just...
Built-in bookshelf.
So you get shelving, and then on the very top, you can put your plants right in the window.
Right.
About 3 feet above the radiator or more
mm-hmm.
is plenty of space. They'll still be a little warm, but they won't be, like, cooked to death. So you
right.
will still be watering them a little more often, which brings me to another point. As far as watering goes, a lot of people are very, like, strict schedules. I tell everyone it doesn't rain at 4 o'clock every Tuesday
right.
afternoon in nature.
Totally.
The most important thing to keep a plant well watered is to always check the soil and just kind of be mindful of how much light and heat that it's getting. So like in a window in the summertime, that plant's going to be cooking. You might be watering that every couple of days. But in the wintertime, when the sun eases off and maybe the window's a little cooler because it's cold outside, you might be watering once a week to once every 2 weeks. So. The weather outside and your window conditions are definitely something to be mindful of when it comes to watering. But when in doubt, look at the plant. Is it drooping? Are the leaves curling inwards? And is the soil dry? If the soil's not dry, then don't water it.
Right. And the end.
The end.
The end. End of podcast. Yeah, I think the thing, too, that I'm learning is that plants, even though they're indoor houseplants, they come from outside. They're used to being outdoors in nature. So they are going to be hardy in that way.
Right.
And so thinking about it, like, you don't need to be prissy about, like, watering them every day at 4 o'clock or something. That's not how they existed in nature. So why would you need to be so high maintenance about that?
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm definitely a high maintenance plant mom. I love watering my plants every day. I love...
it's very relaxing.
Yeah, it's very relaxing. It's very, like, meditative. But at the same time, I had to catch myself in the beginning being like, you don't need to distill your water, like you don't need to water them from the Brita, like you don't need to
yeah.
do all these crazy things, you don't need to order these expensive things online, like you can
Absolutely.
Put a plant in the right soil
mm-hmm.
in a pot with drainage and it's gonna be fine, like it's not that high stakes.
Yeah, most plants are actually very forgiving. Even you know, the famed orchids are actually more forgiving than you think they are. They're very adaptable. As long as you don't, like, violate, like, go too out of bounds, they're okay with, you know, rolling with the punches. So, like, if they're a little too wet once, they might drop a couple of leaves, but if you let them dry out, they'll just grow new leaves. They'll bounce right back.
Totally. You taught me when I was at Plants 101 last week, I had some pothos that I kind of thought I killed in these terracotta planters, and I showed you a picture of them, and you were like, no, those are just, like, so underwatered. And I'm like, but I'm watering them. And you're like, you're not watering them enough. And you taught me how to soak them overnight, and they bounced back. It was kind of amazing how they bounced back so quickly.
That's a really good point, actually. Yeah. A lot of people, when they add water to ceramic or to pots in general, when the soil dries out, it actually pulls away from the sides of the pot, so that if you've ever watered and then the water starts immediately coming out of the bottom, that water is not going into the soil. That water is actually rushing around the soil inside the pot and coming straight out the bottom.
Right.
And so the soil is actually like a sponge. And so that sponge needs to, like, sit in that water to soak it up to really get to where the roots are. Because otherwise, if you actually take your finger and you feel the soil, it's still bone dry on the inside. The water's just bypassed everything. So the soaking method, especially for smaller plants, is actually really effective because it allows the soil to sponge it all in and really get wet, so that you really get the plant well watered. Because, like, you can water your plant like every other day, but if it rushes down the sides, your plant's not really getting watered.
It's not going anywhere.
And then you're really confused because you're like, well, my plant looks like it's dry, but I'm watering it every day and I'm so
I'm being
lost.
Good, I swear. Yeah.
And that's just, like, something to be mindful of, that the soil is like a sponge. And if you've ever, like, you know, gone to, like, the dollar store, I go to my dollar store and I get the smiley face sponge. And, like, if a fresh sponge that's, like, really dry and crispy, if you hold it under the faucet without, like, squeezing it, it actually takes a long time for the water to get into
that's
the center
true.
Without squeezing it. And the soil is kind of the same way. So you have to, like, let them soak. You have to let it sit in the water, which is why I think pots with drainage are the best. And soaking them, pouring the water on top and just letting it flow through until the pot's sitting in about a half inch of water to an inch of water is absolutely great. And then it soaks it up. And you'll notice if it's, like, in a half inch of water, in, like, 2 hours, all that water will be gone. It'll be in the soil. And then you'll know, ah, now the water's in the soil. The plant has a chance to soak it up. The plant will be really great. And then you just let your plant dry out.
Yeah, I feel like I have some pots that have saucers. And now I'm actually just filling the saucers up and waiting for the plant to pull the water in.
Yep.
And that, I've had a couple plants that respond really well to that.
Absolutely.
Especially if they have a lot of leaves on top where you don't want to get the leaves wet.
Absolutely. And you
are
know,
these correct? Are these are really these truths?
these are definitely ways to, I would also add a little bit of water to the top because I feel like it helps with
on both sides.
The suction action. Also because like sometimes the water doesn't pull all the way up, so you want the water to come down. Because once water like touches itself, if that makes sense, then it like the whole thing is like it soaks right in.
Right.
So, but also just be mindful that the saucer that you're pouring the water in is a deep enough saucer. You can always transfer to a bowl.
Like, right.
You know, I transfer to a cereal bowl and then I take it out and then I just wash the cereal bowl, give it a quick rinse, put it on the drying rack and then you're ready to eat out of it again.
Exactly.
So, all really cool tips and tricks.
I love it. Okay. So just to recap, for low maintenance plant parents, good starters are succulents if you have sun, and snake plants, ZZ plants if you have more low light.
And even pothos, they're pretty good too in lower light as well.
Pothos. It's so funny because those were the four, pothos and succulents were my first plants and I watered them every day and I killed them all and I thought like I had a brown thumb just because I was caring for them wrong. This was like several years ago. Then if you want to be a more hands-on plant parent, you're going to get, and you have sun, what kind of plants?
You, the more light you have, the wider your options are. Cause you can even have lower light plants in brighter conditions. They'll be okay like that. You can also elect to move those lower light plants away from the window and you can have them wherever you want, especially if you get really good light. So the more light you have, the more you can do brighter light options. But if you want a high maintenance plant that's, bright light, you can do a fiddle leaf fig. You can do, you know,
the fancy fiddly fig all over Instagram.
Everyone wants them.
Everybody wants them. No one can take care of them.
They need a lot of light or they start dropping leaves.
And you can't move them, right? Like they're not very good with getting moved a lot in your apartment, right?
They don't like sudden changes in conditions. They like to be stable. They'd rather be stable. Even in slightly less than ideal conditions, they'll like be moving all the time.
But they're so cute.
But they're cute and they're pretty good. And if you have bright light, you can also do air plants. Air plants are super awesome. They love the bright light. They love being spritzed every day. Some people like to soak them. I prefer to spritz them and like not really soak them as much. Because as long as you spritz them every day, and sometimes if they get full sun, you might even be spritzing them twice a day.
Can otherwise, air plants be low light as well?
No, they're bright
light.
They
need sun.
So they're bromeliads, actually, and in the bromeliad family, and all bromeliads are epiphytes, meaning they grow on tops of trees, and so they like dappled light to being blasted with sunlight. Like if you look at pictures of Central America, there's like air plants growing on top of telephone wires. They actually have to scrape them off because there are weeds down there, and you can scrape them off and give them to me.
I know. I'll take them. I love air plants. I'm like really into air plants these
days. They're really fun.
They're so cool and they're so different and they flower. They're like so ugly, but then they have these beautiful flowers.
Oh,
it's like such a cool mix of things.
Yeah, and they reproduce, you know, once they flower, unfortunately, they're a type of plant called a monocarpic plant. They once they flower, they die.
Right.
But they produce many little
pups and babies. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. So for high maintenance, fiddleleaf fig, air plants, ferns, because you can spritz your ferns every day.
Right. You would just keep, depending on the fern, because some ferns are bright light ferns, but a lot of ferns are low light ferns, so it depends on the fern you get.
Where does prayer plant fall in?
Prayer plant is on the medium light, so it's somewhere in between. It likes, its ideal light situation is dappled light.
Okay.
So like a little bit of sunlight hitting it,
but they're more high maintenance, right?
Yeah, as long as they get that dappled light, they're usually okay. You just have to keep an eye on them for, you know, what their leaves are doing. They're what I call very vocal plants.
Right.
So they'll tell you exactly what they want. So their leaves will start to curl in when they're dry, and they'll start to yellow if they're getting too much water, if the soil's staying too wet for too long. That's what they'll do. So they're on that. But staghorn ferns are really great for bright light windows. Staghorn ferns are epiphytes.
Oh, those
they grow
are cool.
on top of things. And even certain species of easy care orchids are pretty good too. But I love the staghorn fern. They get huge.
Mm-hmm.
I have a staghorn fern and
it's they're
just
so
like,
striking.
Oh yeah, they're like kind of wacky looking and they're just awesome, especially when they start growing the little antlers.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you've seen pictures on Instagram just staghorn ferns being like mounted on a placard, like kind of like a deer head.
Yeah.
They're just super cool looking. It's like the vegan deer head.
The vegan deer head. I love that. So, other basic houseplant care 101, your specialty, hit me with it.
Just like I said before, keep in mind what your plant is, its natural environment, and try your best to recreate its natural environment. If it's a humidity lover, like a fern or an air plant or an orchid, bathrooms and kitchens, wherever there's a source of water where the humidity might be a little higher, definitely good places for those plants.
And if you want to recreate humidity and you don't have a bathroom with a window or something, what are the best ways to do that?
You could do that with a lot of people do the tray filled with pebbles and fill that with water and let that evaporate. I also highly recommend a humidifier. It's good for your plants and it's also good for your health.
Right.
Like I've been told I snore less with a humidifier and like you get sick less because like in the wintertime, especially here in New York, it's just really awful.
Brutal.
It's brutal, it's dry, and I'm sure there's, you know, a lot of people in drier parts of the nation that are going to say, well, you know, dryness is super awesome, but here, dry, it's just like, you know, you get used to the humidity, and then you switch to the dry in the winter, and then you're back to the humidity in the summer. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of changes, and it's not spectacular. You know, your body's a little more vulnerable during times of dryness, so it's definitely great for, and there's all sorts of like cool looking humidifiers, and you could put like the scented oils in them or whatever, but I love the humidifiers that just like shoot out as much humidity as possible. I like humidity. I, you know, not everyone does, but I like the humidity and plants love the humidity.
Plants love humidity. When I came into the store this morning,
Except for cacti.
Oh, it's a jungle. Right. Oh, cacti don't like humidity.
No, cacti.
Okay. Of course, because they're in the dry desert.
They're in the dry desert. They don't like humidity. They don't want humidity. They don't care about humidity. Other plants won't really care if it's humid or not. Like the figs or the rubber trees. Like the fiddleleaf fig might be a little more sensitive, but the rubber tree doesn't care how humid it is because the leaves are very thick and waxy. So that's something to look out for. If the leaves are thick and waxy, it probably doesn't care about humidity, but if they're thin and fine and delicate, humidity is going to be a big factor. So if you notice, a lot of fern leaves are very thin.
Right.
Air plant leaves are on the thin side. A lot of air plants are like just kind of like balls of fuzz, which are like super thin. So that increases the surface area of the leaf. And so with a greater surface area, you have more dependence on humidity, because that can dry out faster. The more surface area you have, the faster you dry out. Definitely something to be aware of.
Yeah.
And also, I think that as far as lighting conditions, just be mindful of the light. And I think that as humans, we don't really realize that other things see the or perceive the world differently than we do.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these things in our eyes called irises. So that's the colorful part of your eye.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually expands and contracts to let in the appropriate amount of light so that we always see things as the same brightness no matter where we are. So I use the example of, you know, if it's a bright summer day and you're outside and you look down into the subway looks pretty dark. Or if you look, you know, into a doorway, an open doorway, it looks pretty dark on the inside. But then you go in, your eyes adjust, and you see that it's actually very bright. And then all of a sudden, outdoors is super bright.
Right.
You might have to shield your eyes. That's your eyes adjusting. Plants see light for how it truly is. And so to a plant, even though, you know, in the subway or inside of a building, it might seem fully bright to us because we have lights on. But not only do plants use different wavelengths of light for photosynthesis, they see it differently. They'll also see it for how it is. So like inside of a building is like a dark cave to them.
Right.
So, you know, also keeping in mind that the only real source of light to them is coming through a window. That's one direction. Whereas mm-hmm. outside, it's coming from all directions, like top, down, bottom, left, right, center, everywhere. And so there's an old horticulturalist adage that says that, you know, the darkest shade outside is still much brighter than the brightest light inside.
Yeah.
Even if it's full sun coming inside, it's still brighter in shade outside, which is like kind of mind-blowing if you think about it. But
so if you're in your apartment, because something I struggle with is when I'm reading about a plant and it says medium light, low light, to have the context of that. So you should be, all the lights in your apartment should be off when you're taking, when you're really looking at your apartment to say, do I have bright light? Do I have low light?
Right.
And in one room, you're going to have different amounts of bright, medium light. Your corners
absolutely.
Might have low light and your
and that will
middle
change
of
during
your room.
The day.
Right. And that'll change during the day. That's important.
Yes, very. So unless you want to play with supplemental lighting, which is an entirely other podcast,
right.
That's a very complicated
subject.
Exactly.
Oh, my God, yes.
as far as natural light goes, it changes with the season and it changes with time of day. So low, medium, and bright light are just kind of umbrella term. So
mm-hmm.
I'll start with low light because that's one of the easiest, and then I'll go with bright light. So low light is anything that's more than 5 feet away from a window, period.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if your window faces like a building, then it's like maybe like 2 or 3 feet away from a
mm-hmm.
window. Basically anything that doesn't get any sunbeams on it at all. So that's low light.
So does that mean if the lights are off, it's dark?
It's pretty dark. It's
okay.
Pretty much on the dark side, and all the light is indirect.
Okay.
So that would be low light. And there are plants that tolerate low light, but they don't really grow or thrive. They might look the same forever. They might not even grow anymore.
Right.
They'll just kind of stay the same.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll adjust to whatever light they're getting. Because remember, light is food. So if you're not getting as much food, you'll shed all those leaves. You'll shed those pounds.
Right.
So that's just something to keep in mind. And so then we go to bright light. Bright light is direct sun. So that's direct sun for a good portion of the day. Maybe more than 4 or 5 hours of direct sun coming through the window.
Mm-hmm.
Bright light, whether you're on the top floor and there's nothing in your way, or whether, you know, you have a house or whatever, it's sunlight coming through for most of the day, usually southern exposure windows, southwestern or southeastern exposure windows as well. So that's bright light, and that's the kind of light that cacti like. So that there's always sun coming through.
Right.
And there's not really anything outside blocking it. And then there's this weird gray area of medium light, which I think a lot of people get tripped up on. And so medium light means a lot of things. It could mean a couple of hours of direct sunlight, and
mm-hmm.
then the rest of the day is bright indirect. It could mean a full day of dappled sunlight, which is like sun kind of like poking through tree leaves and like only the occasional sunbeam gets through.
Okay.
Or it could be just really bright indirect light. The plant is right in a northern, like in a northern facing window that never really gets direct sunlight, but is full, like really bright indirect light all day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what medium light is. Just to sort of like...
No, that's so helpful. Because it's a little confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're confused about it and you buy the wrong plant and you do all the right things to care for it, but it's just not in the right light because you misinterpret medium and low or something, you
right.
know, that's that's a deterrent.
Right, and some plants will be ultra sensitive to that, and some mm-hmm. plants won't be as sensitive to that. Also, medium light includes, like, just being outside of sunbeams, so that, like, sort of bright glow around the sunbeams, that mm-hmm. would be medium light as well. So
okay.
medium light plants will like to get teased with a little bit of sunlight, but
right.
or they can live in, you know, no direct sunlight, but it's still super, super bright. So, like, if you have a bright, full, sunny window, but it's, like, at the side of the window, but not in it, so the sun doesn't really touch it, that would still be medium light.
Okay. Oh, that's good to know. So, another thing that intimidated me when I was getting started, and still, even now, mm-hmm. is fertilizing plants. How important is it? What should I be using? Do I need to go out and buy fertilizer? Is it really that important? So, can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so fertilizer is actually important for the long-term health of your plant, especially if you want your plant to be an heirloom or if you want your mm-hmm. plant to be around for a long time. A lot of people, and I think that this is a little misleading in the trade, we call it feeding plants.
Right.
The plant's not eating anything at all. So
right.
fertilizer is just plant vitamins. So
okay.
plants don't get any food from the soil. They just get vitamins, minerals, and water from the soil.
Okay.
They make their own food, kind of makes
right.
sense. And the vitamin is what helps a plant be strong and healthy, especially mm-hmm. if it's growing. And a couple things to know about fertilizer is if your plant is a faster grower,
mm-hmm.
or if it throws up a whole bunch of leaves and goes through a whole bunch of leaves, it'll want to be fertilized a little more often
okay.
than plants that grow really slowly, like cacti or succulents. You can get away with not fertilizing a cactus or succulent for months and months and months, but
okay.
something like maybe a fern or maybe a pothos, that'll probably want to be fertilized maybe once a month. And you can use whatever fertilizer you want.
Okay.
I like the fertilizer that's either liquid fertilizer or like the dissolvable crystals.
Right.
So you can dissolve it and you just add it into your watering can and you just, you know, you follow the instructions.
You just water it normal.
Absolutely.
So it's not like this major
no.
crazy thing. You're
no.
just putting something in your water that you're normally watering your plants with.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And it's the vitamins that would be in the soil anyway, because in the wild, you know, the soil is infinite. All the plant has to do is just keep growing and it'll find more nutrients.
Right.
But in a container, you have to realize you sort of have trapped your plant there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's your responsibility to make sure that those nutrients get replaced as the plant uses them and exhausts the soil.
Right. Okay. All right. So for the longevity of a plant, you really do need to be doing it.
Absolutely.
But it's not scary.
It's scary. Just follow the instructions on the box of whatever you choose and you'll be good.
Okay. I'm going to go home and do it tonight then. I don't do anything before I talk to Chris. I have to wait and get whatever plant thing I do approved by Chris before I actually do it. So to wrap it up, what is one lesson that you feel like having plants teaches you? Why should everyone have a plant besides the fact that they clean your air and, you know, look appealing next to your couch? Why do you think that, you know, every person in a city should have one?
I think that besides the benefits, I think that it teaches you to care for something that doesn't necessarily respond in the way that animals and humans respond.
Mm-hmm.
It teaches you to sort of be more perceptive to other signs and other cues and be more in tune with nature. It's sort of like a learning exercise, like maybe a little bit of a philosophy, just sort of connecting with something that can't connect with you on your level, so you have to expand your mind and you have to be more perceptive to things that don't talk or respond the way that you talk and respond. And I think that that's very important for people to understand that people treat plants like furniture, and they're not furniture, they're living things.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you do to them, they will respond.
Right.
So if you put them towards a window, if you put them in a window, they'll grow towards the light. If you cut a whole bunch of leaves off, the plant will be like, oh, it's time to grow new leaves because I need new leaves. It
right.
will, they will respond to you in many, many ways. And if you do the right thing, you may even get them to flower. So it's about, and this is going to sound a little crazy, but it's about opening your mind to other ways of life and
I love
other
that so
mindsets.
Much. I love that so much. And if you, and it's so true, and it's not crazy at all, and you feel crazy when you say it
because
you experience, but it's true. It's what you experience. And think about if you can teach yourself and learn that with a plant, how can you show up in your life with that life lesson? And how can you look at people in other political parties and look at people that view the world differently than you? I mean,
absolutely.
If everyone can learn that lesson, imagine what the world could be. It's
oh my
so
gosh.
Beautiful.
Just
yeah.
the lesson of understanding and the lesson of trying to put yourself in that person's or that plant's shoes. You know, what does that plant want? What do they need?
Yeah.
What are their needs? Because their needs are not
the same. How can I
help them? Exactly. Because their needs are not the same as yours. So it's really important that we can, you know, take ourselves out of ourselves and like put ourselves in their shoes and just really figure out what's going on here. What motivates this organism? You know, what drives this organism? And just connecting. And once you make that connection, it's like a light bulb goes off, and then it's just everything else sort of makes sense. It's one of those skills that's like more of a tool than it is a thing.
Totally.
A tool that you can use to apply to any other aspect of your life.
Totally. Oh man, what a beautiful way to wrap this up. So that's also why plant people are the best people. Plant people are some of the kindest people I've ever met. Hands down.
Yeah, absolutely. They're super nice. You know, I haven't really met a not nice plant person.
Seriously, it's kind of remarkable. Mm-hmm. But anyway, if you guys are interested in visiting the SIL, you can come find Chris and the team at the SIL at 84 Hester Street in Chinatown.
You can visit us online. Yep, that's right.
Take over. Yeah, go for it.
You can also visit us online. We have a website. We ship nationwide, thesill.com, thesill.com.
The shipping's so easy. I sent a plant to a friend last week, and it got delivered like before the promised deadline, and like the whole process is seamless.
Yeah, and it's really nice. We include like little gift notes and we gift wrap it. So it's like super clean, super polished. It's like a gift that you just click order and it sends to whoever you want.
And when you send a plant, they get to keep it forever. It's not flowers that are going to die in a week, you know?
Yeah, that's the other cool thing. Like a plant, you can keep a plant. Flowers, you know, they die. And plants are just, the living thing is much better than, you know, a part of the living thing. So, but also we have workshops. We do weekly workshops. Come learn about plants, nerd out about plants. Like
drink
we mentioned,
drink and nerd out.
There's, it's also BYOB, so if you want to bring something else, you know,
right,
we won't say no.
So fun. So fun. And visit their Instagram. The SIL's Instagram account is some of the most beautiful curated photos of plants in different homes across the world, really.
Yeah.
And they're always keeping you up to date on what workshops they're doing and what plants they have in store and what you can order and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. And we rotate our collection occasionally, so stay tuned.
Stay tuned. All right, Chris, thank you so much. This was such a treat.
I'm so happy. Thank you so much for having me.
Yay! My heart's exploding. Thanks again for having a listen today. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Bloom and Grow Radio on iTunes and leave us a review. If you want to follow the Bloom and Grow journey and are interested in more plant tips, give us a follow on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio and visit www.bloomandgrowradio.com to join the email list. And please let me know what you want to hear in the future episodes. I'm here to help you keep blooming and keep growing. Bloom and Grow.